to start. I'll call the meeting to order at 10:10. All right, we'll start out with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call. Do roll call?
Yes. Do we have Diane Bruning? Okay, no Diane Bruning. Do we have Karen Plummer?
Yes, I'm here.
Perfect, thank you. Kelly Anderson, I have that she declined. Is she attending over the phone? Okay, not present. Andrea Weck Robertson?
Yes.
Present. And Alicia Miller. Is Alicia or Alicia?
Alicia.
Alicia Miller. Perfect, thank you very much. So we have quorum. We have three out of the five members.
Okay. This is Christy. So to get started today, we wanted to discuss the criteria for students to continue on an ESA after the age of 18. So I know we had a submission come in this morning from, I believe, Alicia on graduation. It was a graduation readiness form, so if everyone has that. I think we can get started with kind of allowing you a chance to explain what the school system currently does to allow students to continue on past the age of 18.
Okay, perfect. So if you look at the form, it's just good information as far as the top piece. It's just the state graduation requirement. And then when you scroll down, it's the transition and IEP requirement. And this is what, this is really just our district and what it is that we are trying to put in place to ensure that we're providing each student safe. So the goals need to be appropriate post-secondary goals. And it's, those are identified by the team. And they want to make sure that they're measurable and that there's a transition plan and transition goals in place. So that, again, is something that each student is different, and that's very much where the individualized piece comes in. What it is that, what is it that we think this child is capable of doing past high school, and what goal? Was that a question?
No.
Sorry, I was just moving the mic.
Oh, okay. And then, so basically, what goals do we need to put in place to make sure that this child is capable of hopefully meeting those post-secondary goals. Then the services, same thing. The transition is the transition goals are then drive the services. So what is it that we need to make sure that we put in place that we, so that we can help the child access these goals and meet the goals? And then what kind of activities have we implemented? So we do a lot of community work, things like that. So if we think that the child is capable of working at Fry's and the child has a desire to work at Fry's, we partner with Fry's to allow them to go and do some community work while they're in school and get trained on how to, you know, stock shelves or bag or, you know, whatever it is that they have chosen as a desired career choice for them. Then outside agencies, we try to coordinate and make sure that any sort of outside agencies are working along with the team to make sure that that transition is, that graduation piece is fluent and fluid for the child, so that they don't have any hiccups and have any reason to have to stop their work as they proceeded. The biggest issue for us has been, the reason we've had to put a lot of this in place is because of the due processes and things that have happened as far as graduating students too early in the state. So we want to make sure that the child, or the opposite. So either graduating too early to where they actually needed to continue, or continuing them when really they've met their graduation requirements. So that's why they've kind of put this checklist in place to make sure that we're not keeping children too long or students too long when they actually can be out independently working, or, you know, whatever it is that their post-secondary goals were. If they've met those, then they need to move on. And if they're not quite there yet, then that's when they make that team determination that the child needs to stay in school to continue to work towards those goals.
Can I ask you a question? In a nutshell, makes sense. Okay, I have a question. So when you say that you've had kids that haven't quite met their criteria, but you've let them out, then what does the parent do? They come back to you and say, no, this isn't working, we need to go back to school?
No, I think this is actually put in place so that we don't let them out too early. So if they've met their requirements, then they're graduated.
Okay.
If they haven't met their requirements, then they continue in. But that was actually something, there was like a due process, like I'm sure ADE, I can probably speak better to this, but there was a few years back where I think it was Coolidge had graduated a child and the parents didn't think the child was ready, and then they actually did end up having to re-enroll them, and it was just kind of a mess. So...
Yeah, this is Corinne in Tucson. The largest school district here, TUSD, did that to a large number of students. And so they actually had to work with, I think it was either Raising Special Kids or another parent group, maybe Pilot Parents, and Arizona Department of Ed, and they came up with a policy because it was a big problem, and the parents could not get their children back into school. So this is probably just, you know, fallout from that as well.
Okay.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next step, for sure. So I
did invite Shannon and Casey from our Alternative Dispute Resolution division. And do either of you have any additional information as like what you would see as appropriate criteria to be considered for determining when the student should continue on the program past the age of 18?
Well, I don't know that we can speak about the program. In terms of the requirements under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and its implementing regulations, a student is entitled to receive a free appropriate public education until they either graduate from high school with a regular high school diploma.
That's fully aligned to the state standards.
Which is not an IEP team decision, it just is that they either have met the graduation requirements or they have not. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or they age out, which under the IDEA, they age out until 21 or till a date determined by the state. In Arizona, under Arizona revised statutes, that's the school year in which the child turns 22.
So say that those kids are 22 in the summer, would they go that following year?
If they no.
No. They would have to...
It would have to be like August 5th and school started on August 1st, then they could stay the whole year.
Right, but if they had a July birthday.
If they had a July birthday, they would be done. Okay, I just didn't know how that works. Sorry.
No, that's a good question.
Okay. Okay.
So just to clarify... Cool.
I think that one of the problems that... why we're having this problem, why the law had to be revised, you know, is that Arizona Department of Ed has told parents that when we sign up for ESA, we are waiving FAPE. So that's why they were able to exit everybody at 18, was because we had no FAPE. So now we're trying to figure out, because the law has been passed, that the children can stay in based on criteria that we are coming up with. I'm not saying these aren't good things to look at, but just to kind of keep it in perspective of kind of why we're here is because we were told that this was not going to apply to us. So now how do we move forward to make sure that everybody's comfortable with whether or not children in ESA that have come in under special education criteria can now continue their education as if they were in the public school?
So under the IDEA, if a parent parentally places their child in a private school or in Arizona that includes homeschool, they are forfeiting their entitlement to a free appropriate public education for the duration of their being in that private or homeschool. If you were at the child's age of 16, 17, 18, 19, if the child has not graduated with a fully aligned high school diploma, you can take the child back to the public school and still have the entitlement of FAPE until that child either graduates or ages out. So you're not waiving the child's right to a FAPE forever, but for the duration of while you keep that child parentally placed in a private school or home school, or until that child graduates with a fully aligned high school diploma.
Okay.
But in ESA, none of those things are true because they're not necessarily in a private school. And we've been told that you cannot categorize your child as being homeschooled. So that was the problem, is that I was told when my son entered ESA that he'd be able to stay just as if he was in the public school. And then there was some concern about what the fallout of that would be. And so then they started Xing everybody at 18. And then we had to go to the legislature to pass the law in order to fix that. So I think we've, at least I feel like in this journey of trying to make this work, we've sort of been through all that stuff. And now we're at the point where the law has been passed that the kids can stay, but we have to come up with the criteria.
Right. So look, and what we were looking at today, our goal was to look at what the public school system does to allow a student to stay until 22. And if what I heard is correct, and I'll just kind of recap it, is that they're entitled to stay in until they meet graduation requirements, and so standards aligned by the state, correct?
The same requirements that apply to all children.
Right. Okay, perfect.
The credit requirements.
The credit requirements. Okay, yeah. Or they age out at the age of 22. So that is currently what our school districts do,
mm-hmm. Right?
Or should be doing.
Should be doing.
Right. Yeah. So the question was.
And the IEP team. Sorry.
Go ahead.
So, and the IEP team then determines where the credit aligns the credits, correct? Like what curriculum component aligns to those credits?
Well, not really. The IEP team should be developing a course of study to make mm-hmm. sure that the student is on track to mm-hmm. do whatever the IEP team believes the child is going to be doing during their high school career. But, and that should align to grade level standards.
Yeah, but
the IEP team is not determining graduation requirements.
And the IEP team can't take a class and decide this one meets requirements when it clearly doesn't. The requirements are laid out by the State Board of Education in the Arizona Administrative Code.
And then, you know, whoever is doing curriculum for the school district is the one who needs to make determinations about what classes are aligning and can be awarded credit towards graduation.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So I think the bigger concern is potentially the kids in ESAs, or the majority of the children in ESAs, are the more impacted students, that maybe it's not cut and dry as far as, yep, this is going to count for this credit and this is not. So how might we be able to get a hold of something like that to help align it to the credits that the ESA children are receiving?
Yeah, I mean, that question is maybe not answerable because you're talking about private schools necessarily issue diplomas, and if they do, they don't have to be aligned necessarily with the academic requirements, and homeschools that have nothing of the kind. So I don't know how to answer that question or whether it's possible to answer that.
I would agree. I mean, the ESA statute states that children are eligible to stay on the program until they finish high school, but didn't define what finishing high school means.
Right, they didn't define that. So what one special needs child finishing, it's almost like they just need to say, if you are special needs and you require special needs, let's just keep it to 22 like the state has to.
That we would have been. Because
there's apples to oranges to pumpkins to
it would have been easier if they had to put an age limit.
Or if they just said this has the same meaning as under the IDEA, graduate or age out.
Okay, so we didn't do that. So now what?
So now here you are.
So you guys get to decide.
Kind of more of a daunting task than I.
Yeah. Is this what you thought you signed up for?
We're really not looking to align it at all to what public schools are doing or what the requirements really are. I think
what you're being asked to do is look at how states, correct me if I'm wrong, Christy and Ashley, look to how the school districts determine eligibility and a student's readiness to be on track to finish high school. I mean, because really what this annual education plan process is about making determinations about whether a student would still continue to meet eligibility mm-hmm. were they in a public school setting. Mm-hmm. So it sounded to me like you were hoping to have a discussion about how schools redetermine eligibility mm-hmm. in order to determine whether a student is eligible to graduate or needs to remain in school because their entitlement to FAPE is continuing.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that while it's true that for a Princely Place private school child, which includes a homeschool child, that they are not entitled to a FAPE, their school's obligations under Child Find have not ended. And so the ability for schools to continue to evaluate these children to determine whether they continue to be eligible as children with disabilities under IDEA hasn't gone away. So
the only problem is that the AEP requires it to be determined annually, and a school's Child Find obligation would only be to reevaluate triennially.
Yeah.
Every 3 years.
Yeah. So, so you could, for example, as part of your criteria, consider, well, does this child have a continuing eligibility from a school right now?
As simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, does their... Yeah, is their eligibility, which was determined maybe a year ago or two mm-hmm. years ago, is that still current? And, I mean, under the federal law and state law, they're current for 3 years.
It may not mm-hmm. still be current, right? You might, right. But for some kids it might already be, which might give you some perspective as to whether they would maintain their eligibility.
So could we do, it almost be like one question would be, do they have continuing eligibility? Have they been evaluated in the past 3 years? If so, then they could continue on past the age of 18. And then maybe we could do, an additional affidavit or something saying that they annually, saying that they're... is still a need for the program.
Is your program?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just trying to walk through it.
Who would write that?
The affidavit.
The affidavit. Or yeah, who would be saying that I believe this child is still eligible? Would it be, you know, because if it's a homeschooled child, would it have to be an outside mm-hmm. psychiatrist evaluation? You know, so maybe the parent takes. This is everything we've done this year, and then they give their opinion. Yes, I believe. And we could make either a list of psychiatrists, or it could just be anybody that they deem that they.
Or would this?
Or could the parent do an affidavit?
Or could the parent
say,
do it?
My child continues to be eligible under this current eligibility determination from the XYZ school district. Attached to this affidavit is documentation of current eligibility.
Well, I think that's also where you have your independent evaluation thing yeah. coming mm-hmm. into play mm-hmm. here as part of your...
So then, I mean...
So each year they would maybe get a
and there's
response
no,
from
and, and so because the way the law's written, it has to be each year.
You have to have an annual review
annual
each year.
Annual review each year. And there's no way to just say...
Annual reviews.
You can waive that like the MUT. You can waive that because you're staying in the public or the private or home.
Well, the way we do it currently... with METs or IEPs, once you come on the program and we see that you have the eligibility or you have the need, then we do not make you submit a new one every single year. Because once you're on and you have the need, you're always on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why we couldn't apply that same thing here.
It makes, it, I don't, it
makes
a lot of sense.
Because once
you're on
and once the need is determined that you need to stay on until mm-hmm. you're 22, mm-hmm. why would we need to?
So the annual review?
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nope.
You still require families to apply annually.
There's renewal annually.
Renewals.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, on
but
the renewal...
But at that time, we don't make them...
It could just be a checkbox. Does the student have a current eligibility determination from...
Well, yeah, I think that that's where the question mark would come into play. Because, as Christy is pointing out, the way that the program is currently being operated, which I do believe conforms with the requirements in the law, once a child is put into the program... they are not requiring that family to reproduce every year a new evaluation report that's showing their continued eligibility, having been done by a school. Because that's not required to keep doing it, there's a lot of families who would just not go back to the school and have a new one done, right? Because why would you need to?
Right.
But for kids whose families have kept doing it for one reason or another, either because they wanted new information or they thought that the eligibility might have changed to a different category or something, those kids might have a current evaluation at the point when they reach 18. And so for those kids, that might be something that you consider as a group, whether you want to ask about whether that would satisfy the need.
And the kids that haven't done it, you can reach out to your public school, go have what you had done for the MET, or do an outside eval and turn that in when they're 18.
Yeah, that would be something for you guys to discuss about which one of those or which combination of that makes sense for you.
Okay, because that makes the most sense.
I think we tried to suggest some of those things kind of along the way, and they were not agreed to. So I guess that's the thing, is that if we're all coming together and making these recommendations and that the Department of Education feels comfortable with them, then we have the best chance of making it work. I think before it was just, we couldn't just get everybody on the same page. And I was thinking at the last meeting, didn't somebody say that they had a form or something that they used? I can't remember what the term was, but it had the term, like the word red in it. I can't remember if it was a red flag or a red file or a red... I can't remember who it was. I can't really find the piece of paper where I wrote it down. We had talked about, you know, some of the kids. So my son came in under developmental disability, intellectual disability, however defined now, hearing loss, and speech language. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to meet graduation requirements. He's not going to meet them, you know, ever. But he's certainly not going to meet them in time to quote unquote graduate at 18. And he would have continued in the school district if I had left him there. And it seemed like we were going to try to figure out if there was some sort of a tiered system or a way we could identify the kids, the students that would be,
and I think
you know, more likely to qualify, and not, we weren't as concerned with getting a lot of data, and then sort of try to, you know, say, okay, that group, you know, we need these, which is, I think the person said there's a lot left.
Yeah, that was me.
For the tiered model of the evaluation, that's going to be under discussion item 2 when we talk about the minimum qualifications for the team and that process. And so right now we're just looking at the criteria for the students to continue on the ESA after the age of 18.
And so just for my clarification, actually, is this group, I think there were 5 that Rebecca named off, is that group the actual independent evaluation team, or no?
No, so the independent evaluation team will have to go through an RFP process.
Okay.
So
you're also having to decide on criteria for those people.
Correct.
As well.
Correct.
Okay,
yep.
I just wanted to make sure.
That they produce all of that,
okay.
Yes.
So that would be action item 2 on the agenda.
So we're still looking at criteria for students to continue on ESA after age 18. We've looked at what the school system model is. The question is whether or not we're comfortable with that model and want to use that model.
It seems to me like that's a lot more in-depth than what a typical ESA, you know, family is having to be required right now, basically. So, I mean, it sounds like, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, really all that's necessary for them is the evaluation. The AEP or IEP piece is really up to the family and the school and what it is that they're targeting, and it's not really something that ABE is too concerned with. Is that
well,
the case?
I, they have to have the AEP and they have to have the evaluation, whether it's through the independent evaluator or a school. But that evaluation, it does have to tell us whether or not they should continue on or not. So the results of that is something we're going to be looking at. So that's what we're trying to decide.
The MET.
Yeah, the MET or the AEP. So what is it that the child, what are the requirements for them to continue on? What is it that we should be looking at within those documents? But because we are going to look at those documents. So just having one isn't enough.
And so what you're
okay,
wanting...
Okay, so what we want to look at is the eligibility requirements on the actual evaluation. So just like IDEA says that, you know, these particular categories of eligibility are pertinent for students in the public school system, like intellectual disability, learning disability, all of that, that qualifies them for services in the public school. So are we saying that we just want to line those out to make them qualified areas of eligibility for an ESA as well?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to decide. But it seemed a little simpler to me with the way Casey and maybe this is just my interpretation, but the way Casey and Shannon put this was that either they are going to meet graduation standards or they're not. That's a really simple, I mean, maybe it isn't as simple as I think, but if you're already looking at that in a public school setting, if they just aren't, if they're not going to meet graduation, then it's, to me it seems that simple, or if they hit 22 and they age out.
So it may be just as simple as, you know, a little checkbox saying, you know, is your student ready to go to college? If not, you wouldn't check that. Or, in, you know, they're not allowed to pay for college credit, right, when they're in the ESA program?
They can, actually.
Oh, they can?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know how we get past that.
College portion. Well, I think it's if they're going to graduate or not. I think that's what we're really looking at. Are they going to graduate?
But you don't graduate like
standards.
This, the problem is that when you're homeschooling, you don't technically graduate.
Nor your GED does not count as a diploma that's fully aligned with high school standards or the state high school graduation standards.
Right. So if they check, hypothetically, if you check the box, they will never meet the specific requirements, you know, 4 credits, 3 credits, 2 credits. Does that mean that they get to continue until they age out? Is that, because that's going to be a scary box as a parent going, wait a second, I just admitted that my kid's not going to get 4 credits in English and 3 credits in math. Does that mean I'm not going to continue on with my ESA?
No.
Or that just means that I'm telling you we're not going to hit this criteria. That's why we need the next 4 years.
Yeah, she brings up such an important component part, because in my discussions with Aiden prior to his departure, there was a notion that what the group would assess would be basically whether or not this child would continue to benefit from education in such a way that they may be able to graduate. But that would be a reason why you'd keep a child on ESA, which I explained to him is certainly not the way we think about children with disabilities in our community, that their educational value lies only in graduation versus non-graduation, that they are, their value in education is multifaceted in a lot of different ways. And so I think what she's bringing up is she's asking, is it, by saying, I don't think my student's going to graduate, does that help you continue to receive an ESA, or does that potentially bar you from continuing to receive an ESA? And that's something that you guys need to be considering as a group.
Right. How do you feel?
I would, before I check that box, I would want to know, is this going to, are they going to say, oh, well, since they're not going to benefit, you know, you're not going to get your ESA. But if I'm admitting that and saying, you know, am I going to get that? We just say, yeah, I'll get my next, you know, year or 4 years. So I guess that's what you're going to get more questions about, that specific, because we're always afraid we're not going to get our ESA.
Yeah, and under the IDEA, and then the way the Arizona Revised Statutes have responded to implementing the IDEA, it's clear that we understand as a community who works in this law that not all students will meet graduation requirements.
Okay.
And that does not mean that they should not continue to receive an education that provides them a lot of worthwhile both
independent living
skills, academic, cognitive skills,
so much.
Transition components, so many things. So that's the whole reason that age out even exists under the IDEA.
Right, I mean, the IDEA, the purpose is to prepare children
for
independent living.
Future
employment. So not, the IDEA does not exist to ensure that children with disabilities get a diploma.
That's just one possibility. That's a hope.
It's a hope. Yeah. I mean, that's what I hope for.
We wouldn't eliminate a child from receiving a FAPE because they can't. That's why they put an age out in there. And so, so my point is explaining was that the notion that that would be a reason you would bar a child from continuing because they couldn't receive a diploma would be contradictory to the to what we would do in our world under the IDEA.
And so that does the do you feel that way with the Department of Ed on the ESA? Do you feel that? Do you understand that and feel that way too?
So I don't know, you know, if I can speak one way or the other. At this point in statute, we're just looking at Section 6. It does say that the department shall base a determination on the qualified student's likelihood to meet the graduation requirements prescribed by the State Board of Education. So,
you know, for some reason I thought that was taken out because I remember being on the committee meeting and bringing that up, and we had a whole discussion just about what this the other person just talked about how that was contrary to what we would have ever been talked to about in our whole special education lives. And I had looked at the bill and looked for that because I thought that that was taken out after that big discussion about it and how that was not what we were trying to determine. So is it still in the bill then?
It is. It's in it's Section 6. And it's a delayed repeal.
Yeah, I was on the committee too, and that was one of the things that we wanted out of there for the special needs kids, and it's in there, Corinne.
Okay, shoot.
Yeah.
Darn it. I thought we took it out.
I did too.
So wasn't it another section? It was in that larger section.
Well, okay, so
it's taken from there.
And the thing is that is just like it's really hard when you call in. You know, you can't see faces and you can't put voices to names or anything. But whoever just spoke about this being counter to what we're trying to do. But honestly, those conversations I never. I mean, my son actually went into ESA when he was 19, so I never had those kind of conversations. So. I don't know what to do then with, if that's still in there, because it's not what happens in the public school, as far as my experience.
It's not, and it shouldn't. The public school should not.
Another flaw in the bill.
I just didn't want to take a second to read through it so that I'm speaking clearly on this and giving the best advice. So when we're reading Section 6, it's just dealing with 2015-2016 cohort year. If it's repealed, it would not. So I'm thinking this is the grandfather clause, right, for this school year.
Okay.
This is what you guys based your determination off of.
That was last school year.
For the students to continue
this year before
this year in this transition year.
So that's our clause for how we allow them to stay on right now before they can take advantage of AEP then.
Okay, right. Perfect. So it looks like it's out for our determination for those students going forward.
So the kids that were on the bubble, sort of, what are we going to do with those students?
Correct.
So, probably did, it was in just for that. So now that helps us.
Because I think that's a good thing for you to think of as you come up with your criteria about how you feel about that language and whether you want it continued.
Good. I'm glad that we cleared that up because I really did doubt we should. I did think we took it out, and we did. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's good. So we're back on track.
Okay. Back on track.
And is there an agenda? Is that like, are you? Could you reference an agenda? Because I've been looking at all the emails, and I'm not seeing one. So could you point me in that direction? I'm a little lost.
It's on the calendar invite. We're looking at statute right now, and the so what's in there right now is statute and also the graduation readiness form that was sent in by Alicia this morning.
So if you look
at it's just those two documents. There's not an actual agenda.
Right.
Okay.
No, there is.
It should be on the appointment, but if it's not, it's on our website. It's the November 8th notice of public meeting that we're following.
Yeah, I didn't get it. It didn't come up on my
email. It didn't.
Okay, but is it? So I got like three emails.
Let me.
So.
I got one.
Am I supposed to open the calendar to see the agenda, or do I go to the website to see the agenda?
Give me one moment. I'm going to go to my desk and make sure it's in there, and then you can open it straight from that appointment from your calendar.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, not a problem. Give me one moment.
Okay, so back to our kind of checklist of that we're putting together or considering. We're talking about maybe doing like a checkbox. Is their eligibility current? Has the evaluation been completed in the past 3 years? Would we be able to do just an additional checkbox that says, is the student making progress at a rate consistent with graduation by the age of 18? Or are they looking for more specific criteria than that?
You have to have an independent evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I think what we were talking about earlier was, could the independent evaluation team look at a current eligibility, and just use that documentation to do the AEP?
Basically, rubber stamp with
Yeah. So you would have this team that compiles your IEP MET type report, and they have the ability to say, yes, we believe that they
through review.
Analogize it to an IDEA scenario, mm-hmm. they would almost be continuing eligibility based upon a review of existing data.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You know how you can
compile a year's worth of their IEP and reaching their goals and not reaching their goals, and they could read this document from the homeschool or from the private school and say, okay, we've got a year's worth of documentation about their progress.
Right. Like, we don't need to gather any additional data.
We don't need anything additional. It's just...
Whereas if you have a student who's 18, 19, and their last eligibility determination was done by a public school when they were 7, then your independent evaluation team might not be able to make a decision based upon what we would call under the IDEA a review of existing data. They may say, we need to gather additional data in order to determine if the student is eligible to continue on the program.
Okay, so in you're saying that a current eligibility is 3 years. If
correct.
The evaluation happened in the past 3 years. Okay.
I'm back. Have you were you able to see the agenda on the calendar invite?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay.
Thank you. This helps.
Okay, I'm sorry. I am challenged this morning. I'm looking at, I've got like three different emails. So I've got one that says EFA committee at 9:16 on today. And it says it has a calendar, it has a PDF, which I believe is the bill, has a copy of graduation readiness form. Those are the attachments. I open the calendar, is that what I do?
No.
You
may have to just go into your email inbox, and you should. I refreshed the calendar invite, so you'll get a new message in your inbox that the item has been refreshed, and so then you should be able to access it once you accept it.
Oh, I have to accept it. It says no response required online, so I didn't know I had to accept it.
Oh, that's okay.
You do not have to respond to this update.
As long as you open it, you should be able to see the agenda in the calendar invite from your inbox.
Okay.
Are you able to see it?
Thank you.
I'm
If you're having trouble seeing it that way, it is also posted on our policy website under Arizona Department of Education.
Okay, well, just go ahead. I will find it, and I will pay attention, so, and I'll
so the
I'll
only
be able to
the only
that.
Two items.
Yeah, there's only two items on the agenda. The first one was criteria for students to continue on the ESA program after the age of 18, and then the second one is a brief discussion on the minimum qualifications for the team. And that would be your independent evaluation team.
Yep, perfect. Okay.
All right, Christy, can you kind of just debrief on where we're at this point for criteria?
Okay, so the last thing we discussed was essentially on their evaluation, if they've had a current or MET within the last 3 years, if they're a student who does, having some kind of box on there where they would check essentially that they would continue eligibility based on existing data. So that's what traditionally would happen in a school district, correct? Did I get that right?
When a child is re-evaluated, mm-hmm. the entire evaluation can consist of a review of existing data. The Perfect. Team says, oh, we have everything we need to determine whether the child continues
so
to be a child.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll say, we don't have enough, we need to gather additional data, but it doesn't have, it can go either way.
I know there is a concern about cost. Would we say what is required for an AEP if they do have a current eligibility, is that they would not do a further review, that they would just, the AEP would indicate that there is a current MET or MET or whatever eligibility mm-hmm. there is, and then that way then they don't mm-hmm. have to do another full review? Or would you
guys... I feel like there wouldn't be any cost associated if all they were doing for the... would be submitting to the independent evaluation team documentation of continuing eligibility.
Well, that depends on the answer to this question. Who pays the independent evaluation team?
The parent of the ESA.
Right.
With
so
the
just
ESA
doing
money.
The review.
You have to pay for the actual review.
Uh-huh. If you do not go through
the public school.
So one of the questions is, for an independent evaluation, can the school be one of those independent evaluators?
Yes,
because because you can go for your MET, you can either have you mm-hmm. can go to the public school system, and they can do it.
So our thought was either you could go the public school route and they could be considered an independent mm-hmm. evaluator,
your home school district,
right? Okay. Or a parent could go the AEP route or the other independent evaluator route and actually get an AEP from that independent evaluator, which is the part where we would have to do an RFP for that person.
So I don't think I'm confused where you're getting that. I'm not reading in the statute that you can do one or the other. I'm reading in the statute that the AEP is a required hoop basically mm-hmm. that you jump through once you reach 18.
And I was just suggesting that in order to get an AEP from an independent evaluation team mm-hmm. for students who are currently eligible, it would be a simpler process. It's the gathering of additional data where cost tends to come
mm-hmm,
in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you might have to go to see a psychologist or mm-hmm. a developmental pediatrician or something. If I feel like what would they be paying the independent evaluation team if all they were doing was reviewing existing data and going, yeah, this child continues to be eligible.
But
isn't there still a reporting requirement, though, for that? So
time.
Even if you're just reviewing the data, don't they still have to do, like, a written eligibility report?
Yeah, they'd have to write a report off of their data, which
well,
is not
right,
going to cost.
That's what
a school
never,
is, you know.
This is...
Yeah.
This is
so can you set, like, a cost, like, for a simple review of existing data for a child who continues to be eligible? The...
It would be...
Independent evaluation
with the independent evaluator.
This could be part of that
$100.
Right? I mean, kind of.
Well,
really...
I will tell you that even it sounds simple, but to actually go through that whole process to write all of that up, it's still, a read will still take me about 3 hours to go through
people,
the
final thing. You're talking about getting people to go through a fairly substantial RFP process.
Right.
Just going submitting is something that takes a lot of time, so they got to know that there's some reward on the back end. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to want to make some amount of money. Absolutely. To just sit in a committee, and even if it's just to sit in a committee and review this and write a report, there's got to be some sort of financial reward at the end of it that would warrant their spending their time their doing time. Such a mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if the parent didn't want to
go through that
and have the cost, then again, just like with the MET, you can go to your home public school mm-hmm. and have them do it.
And that's where my question left off is.
I don't see that
that's actually true in the law, that you can, because if the question was you could just do one or the other, you could just either go to your home school district mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. continue eligibility, or you could go through this AEP process. Then frankly, I don't know why anybody would go through the AEP process, because the home school district has not lost their child fine obligation and would have to evaluate that child.
Okay.
So I don't understand why this process would even be a question. The way that I'm reading the statute is that this is a required component.
Like it's not an option.
Yeah, all mm-hmm. students who are within, is it 2 years of the end of the contract, that they have to have an AEP
done. So parents would be paying an outside evaluator to read these documents,
whether it's
and
to
make
actually
it, no matter what,
collect new data or just to review,
the data.
That would be the sliding scale. Like yeah. mm-hmm. it would be less expensive to just do a mm-hmm. review of existing data up
right.
to mm-hmm. like a full blown.
Right. So could we put in the criteria just and if you would, as a parent, bring in their last year's worth of, you know, IEP or information on that last school year as to why they would need to continue. So if you've got all these documents, then you go to your psychologist that you see, and that they give you a review of their last year. Would that be enough for an AEP?
You don't know.
I don't see why not. That would certainly make it a lot easier.
I mean, this is not anything that exists anywhere but here.
Right, right. So it's whatever we deem necessary. So then that's, I'm anybody on the committee feel like that doesn't make sense?
I think the only additional information I'm hearing that we need is something to determine an eligibility. So, you know, was there testing done? Like, if a child has an intellectual disability and has been identified as such, has there been testing done since preschool? Or, you know, because a lot of times that's it. That's the last IQ test that the child had. So I think that might be the only time that we'd need to collect additional data.
But
you could say if they were taking it to this AEP team, if they have a current IEP or MET right now, if they have a current one, then it could just be a review of existing data potentially. If not, then it would have to go the other route, is what makes sense to me. But I don't know what your thoughts are. So you'd have to have something current so that they could actually have something to review. If it's not current, then there would really be
Something as simple as a current IEP would work.
Yeah, exactly.
A current IEP. So, okay, so that, and most of our kids have them.
It has to be in the evaluation.
3 years.
It has to be, yeah.
An IEP in the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. MET, IEP, right. Yes. Something
current.
Okay, so say...
With an eligibility.
So
well, an IEP would never... have to determine continuing eligibility, because those have to be reviewed annually. So
it'd be your MET
evaluation.
Okay. So then you'd have to go back and get another MET from the public school system.
If you don't have a current one.
Okay.
In order to just have a review of existing data.
Okay.
Otherwise, your independent evaluation team doing the AEP would have to actually start over and collect data.
Okay. So, just correct me if I'm wrong. So, say your MET lapsed at 16, 17, that school year, mm-hmm. you'd have to go back to the public school system, get your MET, bring your up-to-date IEP, get the MET and the updated IEP, and turn that in.
You could do it that way. You only want a review of existing data.
Okay.
But if you don't have a current MET, then you would have to go through the independent evaluation team and have another...
they would collect the data and essentially do the evaluation.
Okay. And then we decide what that data is.
Well,
but we've still yet to determine
the criteria. So I think what I heard everyone say is that, you know, the criteria one would be the student does not currently meet graduation requirements. That would be one. The second one would be that they have...
remember the statute says finish high school, not meet graduation requirements. So the student has not met graduation requirements could be one criteria, but another criteria, I mean, a student with a disability may not finish high school because...
But then you would say, I think we just want to make sure that currently they do not meet graduation requirements.
Yes.
Right?
I would say that kind of has to be one of the
criteria. It has to be one, right? So even if they are on the track of finishing graduation, at this point we don't necessarily care. Each year on their annual review, they'll have to signify that they have not met graduation requirements during that annual review,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if the student has met graduation requirements, then we would not want them to continue on the program, right?
And mm-hmm. I'm sure most students on an ESA would be able to pretty confidently say they haven't met graduation requirements if they aren't in a public school,
right?
Where graduation requirements are...
Yeah.
Courses are aligned to
give
you graduation credit.
Okay, so we'll say first thing of criteria would be does not meet graduation requirements. The second one, do they have a current MET or evaluation?
Or,
it needs to be the MET.
Continues to be to meet the definition of a child with a disability under the IDEA?
Or it would be the three requirements, the three... What is it? Under 15.2.401, it would be under 7, it's 1, 2, and 3. So it's identified as having a disability under Section 504, identified by a school district or by independent third party as a child with a disability. And then the third one would be a child with a disability who's eligible to receive services under 15.763. So those would be your next three criteria.
And you need a criteria about turning 22.
Yeah.
Not 22.
Has not reached the age of 20.
Yeah. So
or will not reach the age of 22 during
the semester. Yeah, you have to figure out how you want it to look, right? Mm-hmm. Because under the Arizona Revised Statute, it would be the school year in which they turn 22. So again, if school year starts August 1st and they turn 22 August 20th, they school can stay the whole year.
The problem becomes the school year starts.
School year becomes a problem.
And then if you're a homeschool student, they might say, the school year is year round. 365.
Well, and how we define school year under ESA is fiscal year, right?
Yes, we go by fiscal year.
So we would just say
fiscal
year.
Do you have that defined somewhere? Is it defined in your statute?
I don't know that it's defined in our statute. It's how we, it's in our policy. So we renew every looking.
So you could talk about something like the contract year or something like that, but you'd want to figure that out.
You're going to have to.
Because our contract aligns to the school, to our traditional school year.
So you could say you guys could decide whether you want to consider something either like cut off at age 22, cut off at age 21, cut off at the end of the contract year in which the child turns 22.
Contract
that one. End of contract.
I think it says in here it's the qualified the criteria. So that already is, we don't have to have that as our criteria because it's already in the law. And it says, and if the qualified student is in the second year prior to the final year of a contract executed pursuant to this article. So those questions might already be answered. I'm not real good at legalese, but they might already be in there that you don't have to further define. I think they'll have to be further defined to the parent because in a parent's mind, you're thinking, okay, this should be just like if we're just in high school in our school district. So they're, for those that are impacted negatively because of the difference with the definition of what a year is, that might be a little bit of a bump, but I think it's already in here. Somebody else can.
No, it is.
Look at that.
Yeah, it does define a qualified student as meeting one of those three criteria.
But in terms of the age out, it's a little unclear because it does say if the department determines that a qualified student meets eligibility criteria prescribed in the annual education plan, the qualified student is eligible to continue to receive monies pursuant to this article until the qualified student reaches 22 years of age,
okay.
Which could mean a lot of, 22 years of age. I don't know how you fund yours, if you fund it only on an annual basis or if you fund you got to figure out how to make your ability to fund the program line up as close as possible with this requirement. So that's why you'd want to consider whether it's a contract year,
think contract year makes the most sense.
Or, but now
that
would be very difficult for us to fund. But now we're paying off of quarters.
Through
so
the school
they,
year in which the qualified student reaches age 22. Yeah, so there seems to be a contradiction between the first part of this paragraph and that part of the paragraph.
The quarter in which the nut stops. That's a lot of work.
Possibly.
That's a lot of work for my staff.
So couldn't you just say,
but
for you, because it's going to be hard for you, the year, even if they, whatever year they turn 22, that be their last year.
Yeah, the contract year in which the student
turns
22.
Because it could be,
sense administratively.
August 30th, and school started August, you got your first payment in August 1st, let them finish their year.
Right.
And it does say
school, they would, wouldn't they? So if
they would.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Arizona law, that would be true for a child with a disability under the IDEA.
And it also says in the law that they shall receive it through the school year.
That's why I said it's confusing, because there's some contradictory language and not just with that. But
So we'll just say the school year is defined as that contract year.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have that. So walk me through the AEP process. So if the AEP, they would look at if they have a current MET, they would say yes. We would then say, well, then they meet the criteria under 1, 2, and 3.
Well,
no, it's an independent.
AEP is a defined term in your statute here. It says annual education plan means an initial individualized evaluation. So first of all, it's saying that there's some type of an evaluation.
But isn't that an evaluation? They look at they review existing data. They have a current MET, so that could be an evaluation, right?
I certainly would think that would make sense, but that's just my opinion about something that's out of our hands. So,
as a committee, we would say that.
Okay, so as a committee, you could potentially say the annual education plan consists of an initial individualized evaluation, which may be a review of an existing eligibility from a school.
Okay.
And if one does not exist, an independent evaluation of some kind. Plus, then you have to have these subsequent annual reviews. So that means that every year that someone has to look at it again.
Okay, right. So let's go back to the initial. We have the criteria is you do not meet graduation requirements. The second would be you will not reach the age of 20. Are you
than 22 or you will not reach that during the school year, or you if you reach it during the school
you
year it's your last one your contract
yeah,
year, whatever
last year
yeah.
okay last year okay
okay
So then, and you have to, and so then the third criteria has to be about this initial,
you have an initial evaluation as determined by this independent evaluation team.
Wait, but is the initial evaluation used to create the AEP?
Problem is that AEP is defined to mean
an initial evaluation
and subsequent reviews. So it's taken a lot of vocabulary and kind of jumbled it and conflated.
I am just thinking out loud, but to me it seems like the AEP is what we would consider in the special ed world the eligibility form.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Probably.
Right. Right. And that's okay. That's all I think we're talking about right now. Like, you're eligible if you do not meet the graduation, you have not met graduation requirements. And
you have a disability because of
you have a disability this. Under 1, 2, and 3. And then if
you're not going to age out.
Yeah, and you figure out 1, 2, and 3 based on the initial evaluation. If you have a continuing evaluation of up to 3 years, if you do not, then you need to have an additional review of additional documents, right?
Well, I think the current evaluation is not necessarily criteria in and of itself, but it's what it's something that the independent evaluation team would use for their initial evaluation in order to develop it. So the initial evaluation could consist simply of a review of an already current evaluation.
Right, because status quo. So without this, before this happened, when Christy's team is just reviewing this for a 12-year-old kid, they're looking at, does this kid meet the definition of qualified student under this statute? Numbers 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What they're basically saying here in this law is that now the AEP, through this quote, individualized evaluation, has to determine, does the kid meet one of these 1, 2, and 3?
Yes.
Right.
So that can either be done because they have existing and current evaluation from a school that demonstrates clearly meeting this.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think that where you're going to have probably kids needing it more are those ones who are eligible under Section 504, right, who don't necessarily have an eligibility category or report to fall back on. They may need some additional outside data. So this team has got to figure out, how do they meet 1, 2, and 3? Oh, good. We've already brought you one from the school district. That makes it easy.
Right.
We don't have one from the school district. Okay, now how do we do it?
Can we put an MET and not just do it in 3 years? Maybe, like, give it a longer span of time? Because, you know, in 3 years, what if it's, like, 5? Because that would open this up so much more
for your purposes,
for our purposes,
to say if something has been done,
if something has been done, an MET has been done in the last 5 years, that opens the scan for so many more people, not having to go back and get an IEP.
I think that that won't pass the headline test, and we may have some concerns when we're down the legislature talking about the program. Because if I can say legally, you know, the 3 years is consistent with IDEA,
okay,
then I have a basis as to how we made that determination.
Okay.
But I won't know if I go down there and say, oh, 5 years, then some parents are going to say, well, why not 6 years?
Okay.
And if I can say 3 years, I have a legal precedent that I can fall back on.
Okay.
That would be my take on it, but.
We might have to address something along those lines, though, because 18 to 22 is 4 years.
It's 4 years.
So if we're talking about just, well, 18, if they turn 18 on August 1st.
Yep.
Right.
So
then they're going to be turning 21 on 2016, 2017, 2019. They're going to be turning 21. And then do we need to do something for between 21 and 22?
The requirement is that it's an annual review. We could just do what we, you know, similar to what we hire for ESA right now, just that you reapply and the annual review.
I think I had asked that question last time too. Whatever the thought process was in waiting the net for everybody else until the age of 18, why couldn't we look at that for this particular situation? So
right,
that kind of talking about that again is that, you know, at one point everybody had to get an MET every 3 years, and then there was a decision made that we weren't. But I never understood how that came to be or what the thought process was behind that. And maybe we could use some of that, because that also is precedent, because it's already been done. So maybe there's something in the discussion that allowed the fee to be waived that could also be used in this particular situation.
So
not to waive, but to not require it.
So when
as often would,
when the decision was made to remove the requirement to submit an MET every 3 years, that was done because of a reevaluation of statute, where statute clearly does not ask us to do that. So we removed that burden from the parent. In this case, with the AEP, it's different. It actually says that it means an initial individualized evaluation and subsequent annual reviews. So in this case, statute doesn't allow us to apply that same logic to it.
What we're talking about is requiring that one of the things we could require is an MET, and then the MET says that when your kid turns 18. But then you don't have to get it again. Yes, you can do an annual review, but you look to see if the MET was done in the last 4 years.
Could you just say it doesn't have to be three MET, because at some point,
that's not what we're following anymore.
Right. Could you say an existing MET instead of an MET from the last 3 years?
Current.
A current MET, because we've all had to get them at one point or another. Right. And if you have an MET, whether it was a year ago or 3 years ago, it's going to all be a few years for a lot of people because all of our kids are younger.
I mean, there could be some families who are really studying the statute and going, oh, wow, at 18, my kid's going to, is it 18 or is it 2 years before they turn 18?
Well, it says that's kind of confusing. Yeah, it says 2 years before 18, but then it says their last contract year too. It says at 18. So
let's just say, for argument's sake, it's 18. I mean, some parents may go, okay, I'm going to need to have some kind of initial evaluation when my kid is 18, and maybe they go to their home school district and say, under your child find obligations, I'm requesting my child's 3-year re-eval.
Okay.
But that would you know, require parents to be kind of watching the timing of it all.
And I had my daughter's Lexi. You guys are familiar with Lexi's Law. So I was using Lexi's Law for all these years, but then we decided that let's let another child be on Lexi's Law. So I gave up my Lexi's Law scholarship, and I did an MET as she went into her freshman year. So I will be one of the parents that's going to go, oh, I don't fall under that 3 years. I need to go get my MET report again.
Yeah.
So then it would just be having to get it again.
Okay. So that could work. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to say that the Department of Ed are going to let those parents know, hey, this is coming up. You're in your last contract year. So this is the documentation that you're going to need. And the easiest way is you just get the MET. And then in our criteria, we can write, even if the criteria has to be looked at every year, the MET in our eyes is good until the age of 22. Like, maybe there's that cutoff at 18 where we say, okay, get the MET or the evaluation of some sort that shows eligibility. And then when the committee meets or whatever, you know, that we are defining the criteria, that you're good to go now until you age out. And yes, you do have to go through it every year, but at least your eligibility doesn't change, and that could make this a lot easier and more streamlined for many families.
This term, initial individualized evaluation, to me, that maybe means something different than what the legislature intended. To me, an initial is the first time you're ever evaluated for eligibility under the IDEA. I don't know that. To me, I'm reading it as them saying, no, the initial individualized evaluation, the first evaluation that you get for an AEP.
I agree. Yeah.
That's exactly what it means.
Yeah.
So does that have to be something different than a pre-existing current evaluation report done by a school district?
Well, even if it's not current, what if you have one from when your child was 8, mm-hmm. and your child is now, whether 18 or 2 years before they're turning 18, whatever the case may be, if we're saying that this, just spitballing, throwing out ideas here as we have been. If we're saying that this independent evaluation team can review existing data on a current eval, why couldn't they review existing data off of an old eval?
Well, they could, right. But they have to do a more in-depth evaluation.
Do they?
Because are we basically just looking, and this is just me not being at the need, them having the special needs to go forward. Is that what we're looking to find here? Is they can't meet their criteria. We know that they have special needs. You know, we know that they have special needs. They're not going to meet their, like you said, they're not going to meet graduation criteria.
They have not met.
They have not met. Mm-hmm. Up to now. Now that they're 18,
yes. And for the next year,
they're not going to meet that criteria. And then you have this eval, whether it's your MET or something that, you know, got them into the special needs program. You have that initial eval. Can you use that to compile the evidence needed for the AEP? Does that make sense?
I mean, essentially, to get an AEP and just, you know, what I believe this independent evaluation team should be looking at are, yeah, have you technically met graduation requirements?
No.
Are you still within the age range of eligibility for an ESA? And are you a student who, were you in a public school, would have a continuing entitlement to a FAPE?
Or a 504 plan.
Or a 504 plan.
Those are also the requirements for qualifications. So it's really just...
So it's almost as simple as that. Those need to be the criteria.
Right.
And then sub-criteria for, were you in a public school, have a continuing eligibility for FAPE? That's where you need some sub-criteria, because you continue to be a child with a disability under the IDEA, which is defined as a child having a disability and who by reason thereof needs special education and related services. And that's, you know, what you do an evaluation for,
right,
to determine, does this child have a disability that impacts them educationally, and because of that cannot access the general curriculum without special education and related services. I mean, this is...
So it could be that simple.
And so the point is they can do that off of a current evaluation, or they can do that off of a 10-year-old evaluation.
Yes.
And you have to decide whether to give them the authority, mm-hmm, to say whether it's current or not current.
Mm-hmm.
Does this give us enough information to make a decision? Yes or no? If the answer is no, then have the authority to go out and get that new data that they would need to continue to make that decision.
Right. But then at that point, you could just go back to your public school and get that.
I think you can. I think you could get that information.
Technically, Child Find, they would be able to.
Sure.
Right.
I suppose the independent evaluation team could say, we don't have enough data to make a decision. Go back to your public school and under their Child Find obligation, request a re-evaluation. Mm-hmm. The problem is going to be if they still have a current evaluate, which is probably not going to be that many kids, but let's say if there is a current evaluate, one that's maybe 1.5 or 2 years old, the public school can say, nope, we refuse to do a re-evaluation.
Or the public school, even on an old evaluation, could just review existing data,
and then
the parent would have to challenge them in due process to get them to do any more data. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it behooves you guys as a committee to figure out if the independent evaluation team runs up against a situation where, regardless of how they've received their initial information, whether it's a current eval, an old eval, information from the parent, whatever the case may be, when they run up against that, if they need new data, are they empowered to then require to contract with, let's say, an independent psychologist or somebody, independent speech therapist, to get that new data? And if so, do the parents get to use their money, to their ESA money, to pay for that?
And we do.
But that's my point, is to empower the team
empower
to go forward
team.
And do it, because right now they're deciding whether they even get to continue. So what happens if they say no? Then where does that money come from?
And the parent would be out of pocket because that's...
It's the same process they would have had to go through with the IEP team.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, going through the district, it's the exact same. You'd have to appeal in.
Except for the parent would never be out of pocket at the district.
Yeah, because if a parent...
But that's their option, right? And this law gives them the opportunity to continue on past 18. And if they do not get the resources from the IEP team or whoever at the district, and they can go through this independent evaluation team, or when they go through the independent evaluation team gives a finding, or not finding, but shows that they do not meet the qualifications to have, I don't know, or to stay on the program past the ESA, or stay on the ESA program past the age of 18, then they would have to go through the appeal process. I mean,
or are you saying that if the independent evaluation team says to the parent, we don't have enough, data to make mm-hmm. a determination of whether your child is eligible to continue on the program, does the independent evaluation team have to gather the data, or do they say to the parent, go out and get us a current psychoed and speech
and
eval,
then bring it back.
And use your ESA money and bring that back, and then we'll review existing data again?
But does ESA allow for those other expenses?
Well, and what I would say is regardless of whether, I mean, you're supposedly allowed to use the money.
Yeah, you're allowed to use the money for it because you have to get an eval. If right. you're getting speech services, which the ESA pays for, you have to have an initial eval.
Mm-hmm. But my point is when they are in this situation where they are deciding, mm-hmm. parents would need to be aware then that that might entail them coming out of pocket, and then if they get told they get to continue on the program, than being able to reimburse themselves. But they're going to have to front that money
until they can get
more information.
Yeah.
What do you mean by reimburse themselves?
So the way this works, the statute is structured, it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to continue. In fact, the whole reason this exists is to determine whether they're going to continue. So I would assume you're not going to fund them before this process. You're going to wait till this process runs its course and then fund them.
But couldn't they use their ESA money
from the year
previous year?
Yes, if they have been frugal and saving
right.
it, but that's not always
should, right. But
but no, because there are people who's sending their children to private schools who are actually coming out of pocket every year above what ESA mm-hmm. pays for. Mm-hmm. Right? So
right.
we're
talking...
But
I don't think that's like our... I don't think that's ESA's job is to determine, like... So if, let's say they do not make it on the program, then they will not... They could have used that money when they were 18, still on the ESA program for that evaluation. If they do not make it on that program and they did not fund it out of their, I don't know, fiscal year, whatever that fiscal year prior to turning 18... then we would not reimburse them.
I know that. That's what I'm saying, is that
right.
parents have to be made aware that that potential exists,
okay.
number one.
That's
and number
right.
two, that as a committee, you guys have to make sure that the IET, the independent evaluation team, is empowered to seek that kind of information, despite the fact that there may not be reimbursement if they so need it.
I see what you're saying. I just wanted to understand what you meant when you said reimbursement.
Okay, so going back to the criteria, just want to make sure we're good on this.
Okay.
We have, does not meet graduation requirements,
mm-hmm.
the age 22,
mm-hmm.
but in the qualifications 1, 2, and 3. And that's it, right?
Right, and then, like, I believe you need the sub-criteria under the third
the
qualification. 1, 2, and 3. This is how
this
you,
is what this means.
This is what this means to be qualified.
Where would that criteria come from? Because I'm assuming that it's already developed.
I mean, it says it's like the child with disability under 15761.
So okay.
Yeah.
Do the job.
Oh, well, that would make it easier.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah, the statute's pretty clear. I mean,
yeah.
it's been in there for a while. So either ESA has a, I mean, I would assume under one, having a disability under section 504.
They have to meet the criteria. Those criteria
to even get the ESA.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
the very first
ESA
if in the first sentence.
Is
if they were already students that met that.
Are those the ones
that
are talking about?
That's
right.
We're already meeting that.
They have to not.
Okay, so that's already a pre.
It's almost a presumption. You have.
Yeah.
We've already determined that, so I don't think it's part of our determination. It's not part of our criteria. That's how we got where we are.
Well, I think it has to be a part of your criteria. Just that we know that the student is still eligible to stay on the ESA program. In the AEP, they're going
to
have to say that they met those qualifications.
Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be difficult.
It shouldn't be difficult because the student should have already met those requirements under ESA. Right. Yeah. It's just part of the the ability for our ESA staff to double check to say, yes, they did meet those qualifications.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so I'm assuming we only have those. Are those our three criteria then? Do we have any other pieces of criteria that we would need in the AEP to determine eligibility on the program past the age of 18?
Somebody spoke of sub-criteria.
So I think Shannon and Casey were saying that we don't need sub-criteria because the statute clearly states what is required to be a qualified student. So,
yeah, since it's pointing specifically to statutes that already list particular criteria, that
I think that's probably right.
I think so too.
So, yeah. Can we just make this easy and say there's just three pieces of criteria?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow, we did it.
Did we just decide our decision?
Can we read the three pieces again?
Yeah, can you read them again? So, I want to make sure.
I mean, I don't have like the exact verbiage, but one would be the student does not meet graduation requirements.
Okay.
Two, it's that the student, well, it's that they're 22, they can be up
not
to
the
age.
Have not reached the age of 22 for the end of the contract year.
Yeah, so you basically you just can't turn
They're
within the age eligibility.
Within the age,
Okay. And we can define what the,
what that is, okay.
And then the qualifications, which is defined in statute as 1, 2, and 3, which is identified as having a disability under Section 504. Number 2 is identified by a school district or by an independent third party pursuant to 15-2403. And then 3 is a child with a disability who is eligible to receive services from a school district under
15-763. So the net is out?
So that's going to be under the second
initial evaluation.
Yeah, so that's going to be under our qualifications for the team and their process to get to these three pieces of criteria.
Okay. And I'm thinking as a parent at the time that that we were exited, how I would meet these requirements. So how do I prove, or do I have to prove, or is it just like Andrea said, just you can check a box or whatever, that my son would not meet graduation requirements? Is there ever, I mean, how is that provable, disprovable? I don't understand how that works.
The IET team is going to have to.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I figure out how would I as a parent, and then could somebody challenge me on that? I don't understand exactly how that works.
So the purpose of the team is to decide if they meet that or not. So that's the next step of what we have to decide now. Does that make sense?
So these are the IET that gets to determine whether the student meets the criteria that we just established.
So now we have to define what that looks like.
Okay.
That's the next part.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. Okay.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that we got a lot done, like the 1, 2, and 3, so we kind of figured out our initial steps for the criteria. So I'm wondering if, you know, if staff can go back, you know, look at what we just did, maybe put up some draft proposals as to what the requirements would be for meeting graduation, and then also kind of walk through the qualifications for the team and that process for an independent evaluation. Does that make sense?
It does. The only thing that I think staff might benefit from this committee just for the next couple of minutes is just throwing some ideas out on the table for what they'd like to see as qualifications for the evaluators. I mean, just, I think maybe just a quick brainstorm so that Christy and her group can go back and kind of have an idea where the committee would like to go so that she can put that proposed
Mm-hmm. So what
would you like to... So this team that's going to basically mm-hmm. be assessing the documentation that you would be providing to them to make this initial evaluation, what kind of qualifications would you like to see?
What kind of personnel do you think would be appropriate to be a part of this team and their experience or qualifications? Or
wouldn't you think either it would be a psychiatrist or a BCBA or a certified teacher? I mean, I'd like a parent on it, just because that gives such a roundabout. There, you know, a teacher and a psychiatrist, they don't live it. Mm-hmm. So having that one person on there to bring the human side to it, I think makes it
difference. I think that's valid. And so to lay the groundwork just for everyone, mm-hmm. so that everyone's clear, if this was a determination being made at a school mm-hmm. under the IDEA, there are certain required people that would participate.
Okay.
First and foremost, the parents of the child with a disability right. are required, not just procedurally, but they have a right to participate.
Okay.
Okay. There would need to be not less than one, so at least one general education teacher of the child who can talk about things like what graduation requirements look like, what curriculum looks like, things like that, mm-hmm. right? At least one special ed teacher of the child, mm-hmm. someone who can talk about what special services would look like for a kid. Why would a kid need something specially designed in order to access their curriculum?
Okay.
There needs to be a person on the team who can actually interpret what all these evaluation results mean.
Right.
And there needs to be a person who, for a school, is responsible to commit resources for the agency. We're talking about a principal or a special ed director or a special ed department or somebody who has the authority to commit the agency to the decisions that are being made. So those are the people that we would expect to see at a school team.
Okay.
So that might give you some sort of place to start when you think about what kind of people would we like to see a part of this type of team.
Okay. That's okay.
I mean, I think actually the inclusion of somebody with a background in the regular ed realm, I mean, somebody who is familiar with the
graduation requirements, like a regular teacher or a high school counselor, those type of
folks. Because one of the criteria that I'm not on the committee, that you all just said was important to you is that they've not met graduation requirements. So it would be important for somebody to be on this committee to say, yes, in fact.
Speak intelligently about what that is and what those look like. For those of you here in the room, I have some copies of the required members of an IEP team, which are the same thing as the required members of a multidisciplinary evaluation team.
I can quickly scan this and put it on the same process
fantastic.
On the, so everyone has it. I'll be right back.
So, yeah, just obviously we just want to make sure you know we're not suggesting that the committee needs to mirror the IEP.
It's just information for you to start with.
Okay. Awesome.
So when we're looking at the team, are we looking at the people who currently work with the student in the private school or wherever it is that they're receiving their education? We're asking to have a special education teacher that's working directly with the student there. Hopefully a general education teacher works at that site.
Those individuals really wouldn't have any obligation to do that. We're talking about a completely independent team at this point.
Yeah, and that's where, obviously, this is one of the biggest differences between what a school team would look like and what this group would look like, because the school team needs to be people who work with the child. This is a situation where you're talking about creating these independent teams,
rosters of teams who, by definition, by being independent, don't know this.
Right. They're looking at this independent information independently.
All right, so that's what we need to be working on this week.
So is this what we're looking at, doing an RFP to identify facilities or companies or whatever that could provide these team members?
Well, we have to determine what these team members should be before we can put out the RFP to ask if anybody can provide this.
Okay.
So
we're determining what qualifications we want to see in the people that are going to be reading these documents, saying.
Right. Like, you should apply forward. For this RFP if you are a person who is a, as a BCBA or is a certified special education teacher.
Okay.
Or, you know, have a list.
You'd be asked to consider information like this. Are you capable of doing that?
Okay.
I think that's what I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around is these people would be highly qualified having been working with the child, but if they're completely random people, then that would make it really hard to make this determination.
And Christy and Ashley, how many of these teams would you anticipate having, needing?
It just says that we're required to have
a list.
But you need to, you know, so you're going to have just, you know, and I would think you would probably hope that the teams sort of worked with some continuity, right? So that they don't just pick one from here, one from here, so that the teams kind of have some sense of, right? If it's team A, then these people are always on team A.
And I think that's how they would how they would have to respond to the RFP as a team.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, because
otherwise you'd have a bunch of
you would have
a bunch of random individuals, and you might have too many of one and not enough of another.
Yes. Well, and the RFP is very specific about that, is that a team is on our list of approved vendors. It's not an individualized person.
That's very good.
So I think that we need to see, like, when we say the RFP, like, the people that are responding would have to meet all of these, or the vendor would have to meet all of this, these requirements.
And like, how many people would the team or would the committee propose? Would you have a team of three, team of five? Like, what are your?
Well, I think that that's what we need to think about.
Yeah, and determine next week.
Well, I really think.
It seems like that would be the minimum needed to determine the requirements, the criteria that we just identified. So we need somebody to help us figure out whether or not they meet the graduation requirements. And then I wasn't able to write everything down, but the age requirement, and then I have qualifications 1, 2, and 3. So we need the minimum number of people to be able to answer those questions. Is that right?
Correct.
Right.
And it looks like under IDEA, there's at least 10 people.
Well, five roles, but some can wear more than one hat.
So you can wear more than one hat? Yeah. Okay.
You could be, under the IDEA, you could be the PEA rep and the person to interpret the educational implications of evaluate. You could be the same person.
Okay.
I feel like...
So I think non-negotiable would, I mean, we'd have to have a parent, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, the parent has all the information on the child. If we're looking at determining eligibility, a person to interpret the results would have to be on the team because they need to be able to determine whether or not the child meets eligibility criteria.
And would you anticipate the person filling that role would have a specific type of degree or a certain... licensure?
Well, so typically that is where the school psychologist comes in for the majority of eligibilities. If it's only a child who has a speech language impairment, then that could be the a speech SLP. But for these purposes, I would imagine it would probably be best to have a school psychologist in that role. You guys agree?
I think that's certainly legitimate.
I think you lost your quorum.
We did lose quorum.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Andrea just left, and we just realized we lost quorum.
Oh, so I'm the only.
Sorry. sorry about that.
Brainstorming now anyway, right?
What was that?
We're just brainstorming now anyway.
You're
going to write up all of these criteria, and then we're going to have some time to think about it, and then probably that's going to be the topic of the next call.
Yeah, so we'll go over next week. We'll go over, or I'm sorry, the 15th. Is that our next meeting?
Yes.
November 15th is our next meeting. So we'll go over the qualifications for evaluation teams. And then the criteria for graduation. I think that's it.
Okay. You're going to send out what we came up with today, right?
Yes.
In a draft form, and we'll send it out on the we'll add it to the calendar invite for November 15th.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you at that.
All right, so that we kind of just brainstorm qualifications would be the parent. We're looking for a parent. We're looking for probably a school psychologist for interpretation purposes. Hold on, teacher.
We do have to stop because we lost quorum, but we will take notes on what we just talked about and we'll send it out. I'm sorry. So that I'm going to adjourn. We'll send additional information out later on.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, and I hope you all have a good week. Thanks for all your comments.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do they understand the open meeting law?
Yeah.